Okay, this next sutta is from Samyutta 35, sutta number 127. And one of the characters or the protagonist is Venerable Pindola Bhardwaja, and he's one of the, he's called the foremost in those who sound a lion's roar. He's also the monk who got in trouble with the Buddha for displaying psychic powers, the whole reason for having a rule against displaying psychic powers is because of Pindola Bhardwaja. And then there's also King Udena, who was the king of Kosambi. On one occasion, the Venerable Pindola Bhardwaja was dwelling at Kosambi in Gosita's park. Then King Udena approached the Venerable Pindola Bhardwaja and exchanged greetings with him. When they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, he sat down to one side and said to him, "Master Bhardwaja, what is the cause and reason why these young bhikkhus, lads with black hair, endowed with the blessing of youth in the prime of life, who have not dallied with sensual pleasures, lead the complete and pure holy life all their lives and maintain it continuously?" "Great King, this was said by the Blessed One who knows and sees, the Arhat, the fully enlightened one. Come, bhikkhus, towards women old enough to be your mother, set up the idea that they are your mother. Towards those of an age to be your sisters, set up the idea that they are your sisters. Towards those young enough to be your daughters, set up the idea that they are your daughters. This is a cause and reason, great king, why these young bhikkhus, lads with black hair, endowed with the blessing of youth in the prime of life, who have not dallied with sensual pleasures, lead the complete and pure holy life all their lives and maintain it continuously. The mind is wanton, Master Bhardwaja. Sometimes states of lust arise even towards women old enough to be one's mother. Sometimes they arise towards women of an age to be one's sister. Sometimes they arise towards women young enough to be one's daughter. Is there any other cause and reason why these young bhikkhus, so on, lead the complete and pure holy life all their lives and maintain it continuously? Great King, this was said by the Blessed One who knows and sees, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one. Come, bhikkhus, review this very body, upwards from the soles of the feet, downwards from the tips of the hair, enclosed in skin, as full of many kinds of impurities. There are in this body head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, pleura, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, excrement, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, saliva, snot, fluid of the joints, urine. This too, great king, is a cause and reason why these young bhikkhus, lead the complete and pure holy life all their lives and maintain it continuously. That is easy, Master Bhardwaja, for those bhikkhus who are developed in body, developed in virtue, developed in mind, developed in wisdom. But it is difficult for those bhikkhus who are undeveloped in body, undeveloped in virtue, undeveloped in mind, undeveloped in wisdom. Sometimes the one thinks, "I will attend to the body as foul," one beholds it as beautiful. Is there any other reason or cause why these young bhikkhus, so on and so forth, lead the complete and pure holy life all their lives and maintain it continuously? Great King, this was said by the Blessed One who knows and sees, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one. Come, bhikkhus, dwell guarding the doors of the sense faculties. Having seen a form with the eye, do not grasp its signs and features, since if you leave the eye faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and displeasure might invade you. Practice the way of its restraint. Guard the eye faculty. Undertake the restraint of the eye faculty. Having heard a sound with the ear, having smelt an odor with the nose, having savored a taste with the tongue, having felt a tactile object with the body, having cognized a mental phenomenon with the mind, do not grasp its signs and features, since If you leave the mind faculty unguarded, evil, unwholesome states of covetousness and displeasure might invade you. Practice the way of its restraint. Guard the mind faculty. Undertake the restraint of the mind faculty. This too, great king, is a cause and reason why these young bhikkhus, so on, lead the complete and pure holy life all their lives and maintain it continuously. It is wonderful, Master Bharadvaja. It is amazing, Master Bharadvaja, how well this has been stated by the Blessed One who knows and sees, the Arahant, the fully enlightened one. So this is the cause and reason why these young bhikkhus, lads with black hair, endowed with the blessing of youth, in the prime of life, who have not dallied with sensual pleasures, lead the complete and pure holy life all their lives and maintain it continuously. In my case, too, when I enter my harem unguarded in body, speech, and mind, without setting up mindfulness, unrestrained in the sense faculties, on that occasion, states of lust assail me forcefully. But when I enter my harem guarded in body, speech, and mind, with mindfulness set up, restrained in the sense faculties, on that occasion, states of lust do not assail me in such a way. Magnificent, Master Bharadvaja, magnificent, Master Bharadvaja. The Dhamma has been made clear in many ways by Master Bharadvaja, as though he were turning upright what had been turned upside down, revealing what was hidden, showing the way to one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for those with eyesight to see forms. Master Bharadvaja, I go for refuge to the Blessed One and to the Dhamma and to the Bhikkhu Sangha. From today, let Master Bharadvaja remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. So it's an interesting sutta going over different ways of maintaining brahmacharya, dealing with sexual desire. And although King Udena was not convinced of the first two techniques, they're still useful to contemplate. And certainly that sense restraint is a huge piece of being able to maintain a quality of focus and not giving rein to one's proliferations of desire and craving. So.
Whereas in the sutras where it's a bhikkhu asks, how does one then not grasp the sense of features?
Uh-huh.
And then it's through practice of the four foundations of mindfulness?
That's a good question. Certainly would, but that in terms of that first, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, one is just that sense of by maintaining that mindfulness and seeing it as an object of mindfulness, as opposed to the signs and features in terms of the signs of. What are the signs and features that are conducive to liking, attraction, or disliking, aversion? Then, say one's not holding on to those features, but one is paying attention, because it could also be in the sense of, one is in terms of an object of mindfulness, the other is in terms of an object of the three characteristics, object of the benefit, the drawback, the way out, or rather than its signs and features, but its characteristic in terms of a causal process. So there's many different aspects. So that's more like yoniso manasikara. As opposed to specific to the four, of course, the four foundations of mindfulness are integral, but the it's not. I wouldn't say it's limited to that.
I was just thinking too that to grasp it, the signs and features requires that you kind of filter out all the other stuff that's not attractive.
Yeah.
Real specific kind of attention.
Yes, yes. I mean, the grasp its signs and features that are actually line up with one's preferences. if one really saw it in a bigger picture, then of course, because that is that's the whole point, is seeing it from a bigger picture. Yes.
In order to be able to guard the sense towards continuously, is it often based upon a tangible sense of ease in the body that sort of anchors or well-being in the body that sort of anchors one?
Well, that's very helpful, in terms of being able to, because in order to maintain mindfulness, you have to be able to maintain effort, and an effort that is strained and creating tension is going to wear one out, and as soon as one starts to wear that out, then that habit of mind kicks in where it's like where the Buddha says that for the ordinary unenlightened puttujana, the only escape from unpleasant feeling is pleasurable feeling. So that if one is even trying to hold sense restraint to such a degree that one is then creating, the sense of tension and tightness and stress, then it's going to swing over to the other side, and then grasp the grasping something as a relief from that uncomfortable quality. I mean, that's the story of Ajahn Chah, where that 3 months he just made it absolutely. He says, "I got to do something about this sensual desire and lust." I said, "Okay, I'm just going to be. I'm not going to look up. I'm not going to." And he spent the whole 3 months. He's got incredible resolve, so that I mean, there was sense restraint, but it was also, there wasn't much natural about it, so it was just really forced, and he had a lot of will, so he's able to maintain that for 3 months and not looking at anybody, not looking up, and there was this well-being at that time. And then he said, "No, it was sort of the last day of Pansa, okay, I've really done a good job on holding this practice for 3 months. Maybe I can look up and see what's happening around me." And sort of the first thing he saw lifting up his eyes was a young woman. And he said, "It was just 3 months of practice, it was gone." He said, "It was like being struck by lightning." So I was like, he'd learned a lot from that. But it wasn't, he learned how to be a bit more balanced.
So, I know there's an implicit teaching here. Would you be willing to spell it out?
What's that?
What is beneficial as opposed to just sort of shutting everything down?
That sense of acknowledging the what's going on, but then, having seen the form with the eye, and it's okay, it's paying attention to the because it's really important to pay attention to the causal process. There's the nature of the mind to go towards dislike, aversion. There's the nature of the mind to go towards attraction. And one has to be able to see what one's picking up and proliferating rather than just holding the mind in a place. And it's the same way in terms of making the mind peaceful in terms of samadhi, despite like you can force the mind to be on the breath, for a certain amount of time, depending on the level of energy and will one's wants to is able to muster, but one can hold the mind from having any other thoughts. But that doesn't actually mean the mind is peaceful. It isn't in balance. And so that, like when we say ekagata, ekagata doesn't mean, because oftentimes we take it as one-pointed, so that if I just hold my mind in this one-pointed place for as long as possible, then I'll make the breakthrough and everything will be good. As opposed to ekagata meaning unification of mind, where the mind is actually different faculties of mind are working together and harmonizing so that there's this stability that is able to see clearly. So that's both the application of wisdom as well as the application of restraint. Okay. Okay, so this next sutta is Samyutta 35, 135. And, of course, it's pointing to the... it's a fairly short sutta, but it's pointing to the recognition that the experience with both the pleasant and unpleasant can be a basis for understanding and liberation. Okay, bhikkhus. It is a gain for you, it is well gained by you, that you have obtained the opportunity for living the holy life. I have seen, bhikkhus, the hell named Contact's sixfold base. Look up the footnote on that. Saying there's no separate hell named Contact's sixfold base, for this designation applies to all 31 great hells. But this is said here with reference to the Avicii hell, which is pretty low down. Okay. There, whatever form one sees with the eye is undesirable, never desirable, unlovely, never lovely, disagreeable, never agreeable. Whatever sound one hears with the ear, whatever odor one smells with the nose, whatever taste one savors with the tongue, whatever tactile object one feels with the body, whatever mental phenomenon one cognizes with the mind is undesirable, never desirable, unlovely, never lovely, disagreeable, never agreeable. It is a gain for you, bhikkhus, it is well gained by you, that you have obtained the opportunity for living the holy life. I have seen, bhikkhus, the heaven named Contact's sixfold base, which is sort of the same name given to the sort of a heaven realm. There, whatever form one sees with the eye is desirable, never undesirable, lovely, never unlovely, agreeable, never disagreeable. Whatever sound one hears with the ear, whatever odor one smells with the nose, whatever taste one savors with the tongue, whatever tactile object one feels with the body, whatever mental phenomenon one cognizes with the mind is desirable, never undesirable, lovely, never unlovely, agreeable, never disagreeable. It is a gain for you, bhikkhus, it is well gained by you, that you have obtained the opportunity for living the holy life. So I think this is, I would say, very... in the how do you say, the cosmology, seen that, or seen, believed that the living in the human realm and being able to experience both pleasure and unpleasurable is the suitable basis for liberation, as opposed to lower realms where one is completely overwhelmed by the unpleasant, and heavenly realms where one is overwhelmed by the pleasant. Okay, the next sutta is Samyutta 35, 153, a method that isn't dependent on externals. Is there a method of exposition, bhikkhus, by means of which a bhikkhu, apart from faith, Apart from personal preference, apart from oral tradition, apart from reasoned reflection, apart from acceptance of a view after pondering it, can declare final knowledge thus. Destroyed is birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more for this state of being. Venerable Sir, our teachings are rooted in the Blessed One, guided by the Blessed One. Take recourse in the Blessed One. It would be good if the Blessed One would clear up the meaning of this statement. Having heard it from him, the bhikkhus will remember it. Then listen and attend closely, bhikkhus. I will speak. Yes, Venerable Sir, the bhikkhus replied. The Blessed One said this. There is a method of exposition by means of which a bhikkhu, apart from faith, apart from personal preference, apart from oral tradition, apart from reasoned reflection, apart from acceptance of a view after pondering it, can declare final knowledge thus. Destroyed is birth, and so on. There is no more for this state of being. And what is that method of exposition? Here, bhikkhus, having seen a form with the eye, if there is lust, hatred, or delusion internally, a bhikkhu understands. There is lust, hatred, or delusion internally. Or, if there is no lust, hatred, or delusion internally, he understands. There is no lust, hatred, or delusion internally. Since this is so, are these things to be understood by faith, or by personal preference, or by oral tradition, or by reasoned reflection, or by acceptance of a view after pondering it? No, Venerable Sir. Aren't these things to be understood by seeing them with wisdom? Yes, Venerable Sir. This, bhikkhus, is the method of exposition by means of which a bhikkhu can declare final knowledge thus. Destroyed is birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more for this state of being. Further, bhikkhus, having heard a sound with the ear, and of course through the different sense bases, the nose, the tongue, the body, having cognized a mental phenomenon with the mind, if there is lust, hatred, or delusion internally, a bhikkhu understands there is lust, hatred, or delusion internally. Or, if there is no lust, hatred, or delusion internally, he understands. There is no lust, hatred, or delusion internally. Since this is so, are these things to be understood by faith, or by personal preference, or by oral tradition, or by reasoned reflection, or by acceptance of a view after pondering it? No, Venerable Sir. Aren't these things to be understood by seeing them with wisdom? Yes, Venerable Sir. This, bhikkhus, is the method of exposition by means of which a bhikkhu, apart from faith, apart from personal preference, apart from oral tradition, apart from reasoned reflection, apart from acceptance of a view after pondering it, can declare final knowledge thus. Destroyed is birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more for this state of being. So, let's say, beautifully straightforward sutta that gives a great exposition on the nature of how the Buddha conceived of the holy life could be lived, and giving that sense of independence from all those things, faith and faith, personal preference, oral tradition, reason, reflection, acceptance of a view after pondering it. These say hammered out by logic, so that on bringing it back to an experiential basis. Yeah.
Well, you said it's a means of exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is he saying that the entirety of the path, or like, because it takes all the way to the final?
It does, yeah, 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 certainly. Of course, it's relying on the different tools and methodologies, but essentially, that is the when one is applying those techniques and perspectives, that's what one is having to do, as opposed to trying to fulfill a technique from an external standard. Yeah. I can remember a monk who, in my early years of practice, and he was getting very disappointed with his practice, because he'd been incredibly diligent, but he'd been keeping a log of how long he'd been practicing, how many hours and how many minutes, and he racked up all these hours. And so he said, I should be getting something out of this. You know, but it was sort of like it was all kind of doing it to get more on his log, rather than bringing the attention inwards. So that the technique was there, but it wasn't being applied.
So also the term or phrase means of exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Can that also be translated as a method of practice or?
Yeah, I think so.
For that example, there would be like sort of applying a technique and just like watching the breath. Okay, I'm going to do this for 30 years. Can't get me there.
Yeah.
And I don't have to wear anything else. But it's not like seeing, always looking at common results, the causes of results.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like the whole point is to reach all these skills.
Yeah.
And then you can't just apply one of them unless you're very, very lucky. You have to keep looking at how that in a particular point of the meditation is actually helping you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Apply something else to it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. That's why the Buddha's teaching is so rich in all these different skillful means, because whether it's for different people, then different things will work. Whether it's for the different individual at different times, different things would work. So it's, you have to develop those skills of how to apply the teachings as well as knowing what they are. Okay, there's one more short one that's worth reading. This is Sanyutta 35, Sutta 155. Okay. Then a certain bhikkhu approached the Blessed One and said to him, Venerable Sir, it is said, a speaker on the Dhamma. In what way, Venerable Sir, is one a speaker on the Dhamma? Bhikkhu, if one teaches the Dhamma for the purpose of disenchantment towards the I, for its fading away and cessation, one can be called a bhikkhu who is a speaker on the Dhamma. If one practices for the purpose of disenchantment towards the I, for its fading away and cessation, one can be called a bhikkhu who is practicing in accordance with the Dhamma. If through disenchantment towards the I, through its fading away and cessation, one is liberated by non-clinging, one can be called a bhikkhu who has attained Nibbana in this very life. Bhikkhu, if one teaches a Dhamma for the purpose of disenchantment towards the ear, towards the nose, towards the tongue, towards the body, for the purpose of disenchantment towards the mind, for its fading away and cessation, one can be called a bhikkhu who is a speaker on the Dhamma. If one is practicing for the purpose of disenchantment towards the mind, for its fading away and cessation, one can be called a bhikkhu who is practicing in accordance with the Dhamma. If through disenchantment towards the mind, through its fading away and cessation, one is liberated by non-clinging, one can be called a bhikkhu who has attained Nibbana in this very life. That's a very beautiful. To me, that's very beautiful. Anyway, it's absolutely kind of clear what the Buddha is praising, that disenchantment. dispassion, cessation. And those are the, whether one is teaching the Dhamma or practicing the Dhamma, if one is hearing the Dhamma, seeing other people practicing the Dhamma, then that's the criterion to be paying attention to recognize for either for oneself or for one is looking at the other practices. Are they useful, beneficial? And then that's the criterion to come back to.